have to thank all of you for being here. You know, many of you, I hope, know the Mark Twain quote, or it's attributed to him. The coldest winter I ever spent was summer in San Francisco. Whoever actually said that clearly wasn't here in February. It takes a lot for you guys to come in here, and I appreciate it. So I wanted to talk a little bit about meaningful content. And just in this era, when we are bombarded with so much coming at us, both as consumers and as business people, how do you break through? I think this is one of the toughest things. So I'm going to talk about it in kind of three ways. First of all, a quick look back, because I think the context is really important. Like Mike, I started my career at a time before social media, before this massive transformation. So I've seen it coming, and I've also had to adapt, as many of you have. But I think it's worth looking back as recently as 2012. Do you remember this? Remember Facebook games? Anybody? Do you remember those? Do you remember when Facebook was a pretty simple platform and when likes and shares were actually organic and they drove success? It wasn't that long ago. And I think it's important to note for a couple of reasons. First of all, how quickly this space is changing, how much we are all challenged as marketing communications professionals with just keeping up. And I included a snapshot of Umpqua's first ever social media campaign, which was actually in 2012, which I went back to just kind of for nostalgia. It was kind of a fun look back. When we had, you know, we're in a heavily regulated industry. The FDIC, our regulators, really hadn't figured out how social media was going to work, how they were going to examine us. Nobody had a clue about what the ROI was going to look like. So there was no business case. But we had a kind of a gut feeling that this idea of community for us as a community bank was really important. And we figured out, hey, let's invite people to help us give our money away. And it worked. 2012 is also important, though, and this is true for large social innovators at the time, right? They were doing the same thing. What's interesting, though, and I think important to note, is at the heart of it was a really simple idea. Would you engage? And I challenged my team with this all the time. Would you engage with that content that you're coming to me and suggesting we put out? And I can't tell you, again, we were a regional bank, not unlimited resources. We had to really be careful, thoughtful about what kind of information we were going to invest our time and resources in. I can't tell you how many campaigns, pieces of content, social posts got killed by being forced to answer that one simple question back in the old days in 2012, before Facebook went public. Well, we all know the landscape today is a little bit different, and I'm sure many of you are familiar with this kind of conversation prism. But I wanted to just show it because I think it's important to note how social media, this space of content, has changed as part of those companies, as those companies' business strategies have changed, right? When Facebook went public in 2012, when Twitter went public, they had a different set of demands. They needed their platforms to perform differently for them. And so that has had and continues to have dramatic impact on all of us as brands and users. So today, obviously, it's quite a bit more complicated, isn't it? But the good news, I don't know how many of you Captain Picard fans, come on, I'm not alone. But that same basic question, would I engage, is still true. And so what I really want to focus on today and what's been really essential for us at Umpqua is what's at the heart of your brand? What's your story? Because there's a lot of distraction. And you know, this, we can get lost in the weeds. And we can really lose sight of the heart of who we are, as companies, as people. And yet, as all of this wonderful research, neuroscience comes out, what it reinforces over and over again is that human truth, human connection, we crave that as human beings. That's not going away. So one of the big things I hope you'll take away from my comments is to really forget about the distraction for a minute. Focus on who you are as an organization. What do you stand for? What's the human-to-human connection that it's really at the core of what you offer? Because that, to me, is where the most meaningful, powerful, purpose-driven content and opportunity for real engagement comes from. I don't know how many of you saw Larry Fink, the CEO of BlackRock, his letter to investors, to CEOs, actually, last month. But he was challenging, and they're the largest investor in the world, I believe. But it was a challenge to organizations, to CEOs. If you're not thinking about your community, your employees, the environment around you, our investment in you is at risk. So you want to think about how content, values, financial performance are linking together. It's an incredible opportunity, and I think all of you in this room as social content thinkers have an opportunity, as Mike was saying, actually, to rise above the distraction of that prism, to rise above the distraction of metrics and measurement and analytics. Those are all important, but there's got to be something at the core of it. And I think our story is actually a good one in helping to illustrate some of this. So bear with me as I share a little bit about Umpqua. This was where we started in 1953 in a really tiny rural town in southern Oregon. It was a lumber town. There was not a lot of business. There wasn't a lot of opportunity. And as you can see, this was actually our first bank branch. It was not a particularly dynamic experience, right? Pretty dry. And about 20 years ago, we started to think, why? Why is banking so bad? Why can't it be better? And we went to our customers. We started there. And this is going to be a theme in my comments. We had a really simple insight that was actually pretty profound for us, which is that money is scary to people. It's intimidating. That hasn't changed in the last 20 years. In fact, today, money is the number one source of stress for 75% of Americans. Think about that. That's a health issue, not just a financial issue. So if money is this source of angst, why can't banking be better? Why does banking have to be scary? With the marble columns, the velvet ropes, why can't banking be an experience that's engaging, interesting, even fun? So, and I'm taking you here because this is where we started really reinventing our business strategy. And it started with customer insight. So what happened after we had that realization? We went back and said, okay, let's reinvent banking. Let's redesign the customer experience. Let's start not from the bank point of view, which is convenient, but let's start from the customer point of view. And what would that look like? And that's what we did. This is one of our stores in Portland. You can see it looks dramatically different, or I hope it looks dramatically different from that shot from 1953. Most people don't think we're a bank just from looking at our stores, and that's really intentional. You can see they're designed as much as coffee shop or hotel lobby as bank branch. We call them stores. We want people to come in and browse and be comfortable, enjoy the space. We have meeting rooms that any organization can rent free of charge. For us, it's about how do we create something that draws people in, that makes them feel comfortable interacting with their money. That was the big idea for us. If you're in a space where you want to bring your kids on a weekend morning, that's a really different experience then. You're going to feel really differently about interacting with your financial life in a space where you feel comfortable hanging out with your kids, going for fun. Yoga classes, anybody, if you've read anything about Umpqua, yoga classes in our bank have probably been on the list. Yes, it's true. But I actually point to this because while a number of our stores do yoga classes and all sorts of movie nights, all sorts of stuff, it's not dictated from corporate. Again, early on, we let go of some of that top-down mentality and said, if we're going to reinvent how banking looks, feels, operates, we actually have to reinvent our culture. We have to create an environment that empowers our associates, our people, to serve their customers differently, to think from a customer point of view first. And I hope as you're listening to this, you're seeing that there's some similarity with what you've probably heard over the last day or so around social media best practices. What's interesting to me is that this is an analog version, but some of those same basic kind of human-to-human truths run through it. This is one of our stores in San Francisco, and I want you just to note the phone there. I'll come back to that in a minute. Another element is really that this has evolved and changed. We didn't just come out with one store design and then say, we're done. We've continued to evolve and change, and particularly during the recession, when small businesses were under such tough times, we said, how can we take our store presence, what can we do that actually adds value, not just lip service, not an ad or a tombstone, and we came up with a program we called Local Spotlight, which allows local businesses to showcase their goods in our store. But it's not just that. We actually actively market it for them, and we sell their products and services and give them all of the money. So trying to come up with creative, iterative ways to use these physical spaces. So back to that phone. Two-way conversation has been at the absolute heart of our business strategy for the last 25 years. This phone is in every one of our stores, and if you dial 8 on that phone, it connects to our CEO's desk. Now, when I say that, most people think you have got to be out of your mind. You have hundreds of stores in 5 states. How on earth does your CEO get anything done? Well, this is, again, one of those interesting things. Most people don't call. We get maybe 3 or 4 calls a day, and he does answer when he's at his desk. His assistant picks up otherwise. Most of the calls are, hey, so-and-so was awesome. They took care of this problem for me. I love them. Just thank them for me. Occasionally, there's an issue. And the power of this, and again, this is, you'll see a theme with social, we decided we had to be willing to actually listen to what is the actual customer experience, not what we wish it is, not what we might hope it would be, not what we might polish up and report to somebody else, but what is it actually? The only way to get that is to be willing to listen, to be willing to understand where you've fallen short so you can take action. So this is interesting, though. People have changed, right? We're all on our devices, phones, tablets, computers, all the time. And a brick-and-mortar strategy, like our store strategy, isn't as relevant as it once was. So for us, we had to go back to the drawing board and really reinvent ourselves, really think about what is a bank that's built itself, built our brand, built our marketing, built our content, every part of who we are around this brick-and-mortar strategy. What were we going to do to remain relevant? Well, lucky thing, it goes back to our customers, right? And this is where I challenge, this is where I started by saying, what's true? What's your core? What's at the heart of your brand, your company? Where does that actually intersect with your customers? Who are they? What do they care about? And, you know, we've done a lot of research over the years, qualitative, quantitative, focus groups. But we decided we actually needed to go even deeper. And we did all of that research again, but we also did really deep psychographic insight gathering. And this is one of those things, yes, it takes time, it's an investment, but I would challenge all of you to think about how you can find opportunities to really know your customers. And for us as a bank, really in a kind of low interest category, people don't like to talk about banks, money, they don't like, we're all told from the time we're kids, money, sex, politics, religion, you don't talk about those things. We wanted to really get into people's lives. And so we spent hours with families talking about what are their systems? How are they handling their money? What keeps them up at night? And that insight led to a redefinition of our customer group, our customer segment. We call them the orchestrators. And this is what we learned that the qualitative, quantitative data could not tell us. Their lives are joyfully hectic, right? They're wonderful. They're full of dogs and kids and families and work, but they're also chaotic. I don't know how many of you, that certainly applies to me. I was on FaceTime with my daughter early this morning, helping her finish up her homework assignment while I'm trying to finish up thinking about what I'm going to say today. This is really an important insight because it allows us as a brand to sharpen our empathy for our customers. Who are they? Where do they have time for money in their lives? What are the opportunities that a bank has to add real value? And the interesting thing about this group is that they really have financial systems. And this is one of the misconceptions that a lot of banks have. We tend to think of customers as, you know, no control over their finances or enormous control over their finances. The fact is that it's kind of in the middle, right? These are people who have systems that work for them. Some of them include, you know, 25-page spreadsheets that they give their friends for Christmas. Others have, you know, one credit card they put everything on. Others have 24 credit cards that they're juggling and making work for themselves. But they have systems, but they're open to insight and help from others. They don't feel that they have a perfect fit. And that's where the opening for us comes in. That's where we can add genuine value, both in the content we're serving up, how we're creating it, how we're providing it, and the empathy, the kind of understanding at the heart of it that makes it relevant. If you think about it, if you've followed any of the kind of financial statistics, I mentioned the one about stress and money, but some of them are pretty dire. You know, 45% of Americans can't come up with $400 in an emergency. $400. And this is not a low-income specific statistic. 55% of consumers struggle to pay their bills on a fairly regular basis. There's need here for financial support. And if you look at bank websites, there's no lack of financial content, right? Are there any other bankers in the room? Yes. Hi, guys. There's no lack of financial literacy information, right? In fact, there's probably too much. So why, with all of this information out there, is there still this complete disconnect in terms of whether and how people are actually absorbing it? Well, it turns out we audited a lot of that content, and it's terrible. It's dry, it's technical, and it's judgmental. So again, there's a huge opportunity by doing this deep dive into our customers, by thinking about the value proposition we have as an organization. There's a huge opportunity for us that ties directly back to content and social. Another point I want to make, and this goes back to your comments, Mike, customer preferences are driving business strategy now. And that's a radical shift and a recent shift. So the closer you are to your customers, and because you guys are all in the social media world, you're essentially there. You're the ones out listening all the time. So the question is, what do you do with the insight you're gathering? Not just in terms of how you're going to respond or tweak a dial over here, but what is that insight actually telling you about how your customers are either finding value from your content, your company, or not? Think about the companies that have, and industries that have been incredibly disrupted. Think about taxis. How many of you guys take taxis anymore? I can't tell you the last time I took a taxi. Banking too. So for us, this shift really meant we had to rethink our business strategy. And this is a new product that we've created, really designed based on customer insight. We call it BFF. This is a pilot, so the name will actually change. But the idea, and I want to actually show you the B-roll here, the idea is really simple. Oh, maybe I can't. That's okay. The idea is really simple. We're using existing technology, video chat, secure text chat, but in a radically different way, right? If our customers are joyfully hectic, they don't have the time and space for much, that means that money and financial conversations need to happen on their terms, in a platform and a vehicle that's convenient to them. So we took established technology, created a secure app, and the interesting thing, where this becomes different, is that it's not driven by bots. So we're giving every Umpqua customer their own personal banker. You log into this app, and you have the opportunity to choose your BFF, your best financial friend. And they're your person. They're your banker. It's an incredibly powerful model because they're available in text and video chat in a format. You know, we're all on our phones all the time, any day. It's an environment that we're used to and comfortable in. That was one of the questions we really had to pilot when we first rolled it out was, would people want to talk about financial topics in that space? It turns out they're more comfortable having in-depth, really personal conversations by text than they are in any other format we've seen. And the relationships that we're opening, when a customer opens an account, they're starting with a far deeper relationship than in other channels. So huge value, but this came from customer insight. This came from understanding who we are. It's also changing how we're marketing. You know, a lot of banks, I doubt many banks have a podcast. We decided we needed a podcast to help create space and an example for how that it's okay to talk about money. Whether it's, you know, an NBA player and his first big $10 million paycheck and what did he do with that money and what was it like, and how what I loved about that conversation was that he actually woke up thinking, I need a budget. You never would have thought of that. We also had an incredible journalist on who, after that study came out about the $400, he wrote a really personal, Neil Gabler, if you haven't read it, I encourage you to look it up, wrote a really personal, moving piece about he's one of them. Despite a six-figure income, he doesn't have $400 in an emergency. We interviewed him. So trying to take away some of the taboo around talking about money at the highest level. It's also really changed how we've thought about content and what that looks like. And again, this, you know, you've seen this, I'm sure you all have this. But for us as an organization, it challenged us to think again from the customer point of view out, right? Our orchestrators, and then our value proposition. What do we offer? We offer human-focused banking. It seems so simple, but really getting at the core of what our value proposition is for them is an essential part for us in terms of developing content in all of our channels, social and all of them, that can be meaningful, that will actually break through and help our customers change the way they bank and live. And then we took some of the, you know, the stuff that works in social, right? Joyful, useful, inspiring, beautiful, some of those categories, tailored them for ourselves, and that's how we create the content that works for us. And this is just a quick example of what I mean by that, but looking at the category and then the filter and using that to then create our content. And we found that this is really important, particularly as teams that are responsible for content development can be spread out across an organization. What holds them all together? What makes sure that you are aligned, gives you content governance and structure that makes your voice consistent, whether it's a social post, whether it's on your website, whether it's in your store, in a brochure, in a bank statement. We want our voice to be consistent because the reality is that content now defines customer experience. And I think, again, that gets back to business strategy in a really powerful way. You guys, what you're listening to, the way that insight allows you to know your customers gives you real influence at the executive level, I would hope, in your organizations, because you're basically the real-time customer feedback gatherers. You have your finger on the pulse of what people are saying and what they're experiencing about your brand. So I want to end with just a couple of tips, things that my team and I, as we were brainstorming a couple weeks ago, came back to over and over and over again. This is something that's been true for Umpqua for 25 years. We are customer obsessed. The people who are recognized within our organization, how we reward people, what we champion and celebrate, is about customer obsession. And again, that has served us incredibly well as the landscape, both the business landscape and the social media and content landscape, has continued to evolve faster and faster. That customer obsession has given us a platform that's really true to who we are. It's also given us a place to really engage our employees. And I would encourage all of you not to forget about that. And I hope some of that has come up in some of the other sessions. Your employees can either be your biggest detractor or your biggest ambassadors, but how you engage them and how transparent your communications are externally versus internally, I can't emphasize how important that is. So one of the ways that we've really tried to show that human-to-human connection and engage and champion our own people is by showcasing them. So this is an example of one of our bankers with one of her customers. You know, it kind of breaks down an idea about bankers as stodgy. It also shows this really lovely, genuine connection between these two human beings and the idea of how our banker has helped the small business grow. Their stories are infinitely more powerful than what I could make up on my own. Know what your customers care about and then be relevant. And this is, again, where you guys are in the perfect position to really lead your organization on this. This was an example. I don't know how many of you caught the story. A real estate billionaire, I can't remember where he was from, I think Australia, wrote a piece that just became one of those viral things that inflamed conversation about millennial generation and really tied into some of the kind of misconceptions there. But he wrote this piece saying that the reason millennials can't buy homes is because they're spending $19 on avocado toast. And our team saw this and thought, you know what, we sell home. We provide home loans. So there's a really nice opportunity to tap into this and be relevant, but to do it in that really human way. So a guy on my team caught it and said, hey, I think there's an idea here. I was talking to a home loan officer. She's a millennial. She's looking for a home. how about we have her write a rebuttal? So we did, and Have Your Avocado Toast and Eat It Too became one of our highest performing pieces of content. Again, because it struck at something timely and relevant with some controversy thrown in, which is always good. But we were able to find a really human-to-human way to tie it back to who we are. We also tracked, of course, and it generated a number of home loans, which is always great, but created a lot of visibility and helped us demonstrate our empathy for our customers. And this one is where it goes back again to business strategy. Understanding, and this is really hard, I think. It's hard in part because as brands, we like to think about ourselves first. That's just our natural orientation. But understanding where your audience, where their needs really, actually, truly intersect with how you can add value. It seems simple. It's really hard. We like to be aspirational. You know, as a bank, we actually offer a pretty basic set of products and services, and it's really easy to think about big picture, aspirational things we could do to help people transform their lives. But the reality is that there's enormous need in that space. We just have to do the hard work of understanding over and over and over again, where do those customer needs intersect with how we can add value, both from a content and social perspective, but also very clearly from a product perspective. Because if it's not driving business results, it's not going to work long term. So this one is important. And as I was talking about earlier, human stories really matter. We see this over and over again in our content, in our stores, across all of our channels. The content where we go the extra mile and engage our own employees, our own customers, dig deep, it takes time. It's not easy, you have to juggle schedules, but the points where we do that are where we see content that outperforms and where it also drives really terrific traffic back to our website and our products. And this is one, you know, as a community bank, we're expected to give back. It's part of just who we are. But this was one that I thought I would share with you because it's a nice illustration of where your values can really inform content that then turns around and drives business results. So, this was a post, if anybody knows the little free libraries, they're these charming little kind of bookcases that you can put in your neighborhood. And they're wildly popular in a number of our markets. And so we said, hey, let's give some away, but let's ask people what their favorite children's books are to help educate them about the summer slide, which is an issue where kids over the summer lose 1 to 3 years over 10 years of their educational growth over the course of summer by not having educational opportunities. And we had thousands and thousands of posts and really deep personal stories. It was one of those places where you saw social kind of go back to how genuine and human it can be as a platform and the kind of positive brand building engagement that drove for us. The traffic we then saw spike to our website was incredible. So before I turn it over to Q&A, I'm just going to tap to those three kind of key points that I would say don't forget these. Listen to your audience. I know you guys are, but don't just listen for the metrics. Step out into the strategic place. Think about your core, your brand, what you offer that nobody else does. What are your kind of essential truths, and how does what you're hearing, what does that mean in terms of those truths? Be willing to try and fail. And in banking, you know, that's not an easy statement to make. But in the social space, and especially given the rapid changing of news cycles and people's attention span and so forth, be willing to try stuff. See how it works. The beauty of social is you see the real-time analytics. You see whether it's working or not. And I would say on the other side of it, be willing to let go of the stuff that you and your team have fallen in love with. If it doesn't perform, kill it. Let it go. And then last but not least, I would just say, don't forget that sniff test. Would you actually engage? Would you share that piece of content? Would you care about it enough to put your personal brand in the middle of it? So with that, thank you so much. It's been a wonderful chance to talk with you, and I look forward to answering questions.
Okay, you all just got schooled in how much freaking smart stuff you can pack into 30 minutes of talking. Oh, my Lord. Thank you so much, Eve. Yeah. Who's got questions? I'll fill up the 10 minutes with my questions. So, but right back here. Go ahead and say your name and where you're from.
Hi, my name's Taylor. I'm from Portland, Oregon, and I also work for a financial company.
Awesome.
And I was curious just about your methods for getting those stories from your bankers and from your customers, because I think sometimes when you work in marketing, you can be really separated from what actually goes on in, like, the day-to-day of the business.
Yes. I could not agree more. Did you guys all hear that? About a year and a half ago, I tasked my team with becoming the company's storytellers, story gatherers and storytellers. And so we actually redrafted job descriptions and really built that into some of the core roles. And what we found was that it was actually a really powerful relationship and kind of connecting point that allowed our business units, our customer-facing teams, to understand the value of social media, the role they could play. And yes, it takes time, but we've built out calls with our regional leadership. We've created kind of incentive programs where the stories that kind of bubble up to the top as best, meaning they reflect real empathy for customer needs, they show that human-to-human interaction and connection, and most importantly, then they show how we added real value to that customer situation. We champion those on our intranet. We have our CEO make personal phone calls thanking people. You know, we've created kind of a positive echo chamber internally that helps incentivize people to think, to stop and share that story, because that's really what it used to come down to. People would have a great story, but they didn't want to take the time to, you know, send an email or drop it in. We also have a communications inbox that's the receptacle for a lot of that information. So we've actually created now, over the last year, a spreadsheet of great stories so that if we don't have some that are bubbling up on a topic we need, we can go and say, okay, we need something on home lending. What do we have? Or we need something on small business. So over time, we've built that, and it's been a really helpful tool.
Hi, my name is Kim Stoll, and I work for the Shingle Springs Band of Miwok Indians outside of Sacramento.
Yeah.
And my question is, as you changed all these business models and things, how did that impact revenue and the bottom line, and how long did that transition take?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure it continues to transition.
It does. So, you know, the good news for us when we started in the mid-90s and said, hey, how can we change banking? We were really small. We had 5 locations and $150 million in assets. So the risk was pretty minimal at that point to say, you know what, let's open a new store, let's flip everything upside down, let's redesign it, let's see how that works. Of course, the bigger you get, the more risky it is to change. But I think if you look at, you know, the Blockbusters and Kodaks of the world, we don't have a choice anymore. And I think that's where the kind of integration, the connection between social and content and business strategy is so important. Customer preferences are changing whether we like it or not. And either as businesses, we are willing to let go of what we've loved and what's worked in the past and take on the risk, the kind of scary quality of we gotta do it differently. Or you know what? The world's going to move on. I mean, if we didn't evolve, I would say this. I think there's risk either way. If we hadn't evolved, if we just said, you know what, we are only going to do stores, physical brick and mortar, that's just as risky, if not riskier, than saying, you know what, let's listen to our customers, let's understand who they are, let's design around them, and then let's pilot it. I mean, that's the beautiful thing about technology. You can also build, pilot, test, try, refine. It's iterative in a way that you know, building a physical location isn't.
Just a lot of key points. I wrote about 4 pages with you. And you're also the culprit of our demise, I think. We've gone through many social media events, and we've gone through many conferences, and I believe that some of my colleagues do have attended some of the UMCO presentation.
Oh, good.
So, yeah, kind of. I think they're getting the ideas, mm-hmm. and I'm seeing some of the things that you talked about, that they're trying to also bring in and penetrate within our institution at the bank. Unfortunately, I think our model is still, you hit that nail on the head when you said, what is our objective here? And the objective is either we change or we'll be dinosaurs.
Right.
So I think we are in that mode. Our brick and mortar is still the traditional bank with big teller bars and things like that. You can only see the eyes of the tellers. We've done branch prototyping and things like that, but
right.
It's now 3 years in the making. We haven't done it yet.
Right.
I've gone through branding with them, and it's been 2 years, and we haven't done it. It's just my question now within the social media and digital world, mm-hmm. knowing that those are some of the struggles already. We have our legal counsel, and then now we just hired a compliance manager that is also a lawyer. I am on my 7th version of my strategic processes and procedure for my social media, mm-hmm. and it's still not enough. And FDIC is coming in on April 23rd. How is that battle mm-hmm. with Umpqua? Is that I'm going to do a presentation when I go back, mm-hmm. so I'd like to point the finger real quick. So what's your advice?
How big are you? How big is your institution?
We're 2 billion asset size. We have a branch here in San Francisco, 23 other branches in the Mariana Island and also in Guam. So,
you know, to me it sounds, and we can talk offline maybe, because I know there's only a couple bankers in the room. I don't know how many others are in highly regulated industries. But to me the question would actually be one for senior leadership around what's the direction they want to go. And are they actually committed to change, or is that too uncomfortable? Is that not part of the strategy they actually want to implement? Because I think you can spend a lot of time and energy trying to push an organization in the direction that you think it needs to go, but if you don't have alignment at the top of the institution, you're going to find yourself frustrated, I think. And you know, from a legal and compliance perspective, we are heavily regulated. Every post, everything has to be maintained for years. So that is a reality we live with too. But we have had really great partnerships with our legal and compliance teams where, I think it helps that I oversee both the team that does social and the corporate reputation, because I am just as invested in a quality social online content experience as they are. Because if it goes wrong, it becomes a reputational issue that lands back on my desk. So I think that's really helped us form a good strategic relationship where they know they can trust that I've got the same concerns that they do.
I'm going to sneak in the last. Oh, gosh, you got a question. Sneak in. We're getting close. I'll sneak one in right after hers is
good.
I'll be really quick. Hi, my name's Nicole, and I manage social media for Freddie Mac, also a giant financial institution. I think the general theme throughout this whole conference has been real people, real stories, storytelling. My question for you, though, and anyone in this room really, is do you think there will ever be a diminishing return on that? I mean, everyone is doing it now. So is it authentic? And how do you foresee the trend changing?
You know, that is a great question. And I would say I think that a lot of people are giving lip service to storytelling. And the thing that is really fascinating about human beings is our blank detectors are incredibly finely tuned, right? We can all look at a piece of content and know that it's a stock image and it's corporate speak and we gloss right past it, right? I think the question is figuring out how do you do it in a way that's really authentic? And that's where I say, because again, I think that a lot of brands, unfortunately, are saying, we have a vague idea of who our customers are, and we need to hit these sales numbers. So we're actually creating human content to drive sales, to sell this product. That's not genuine, it's not authentic, and it's not gonna resonate the same way that content where you do the deep dive and say, okay, these are the issues our customers are really concerned with. Here's how we can help them in a genuine way, and go from there. It takes longer, it's harder, but I think in the end, as human beings, we just know. We know that that's a real story, right? I mean, the photograph I showed of the small business banker, you know, you can't manufacture that. She had a friend take it on their iPhone, and that's the shot, right? And I think being okay as brands with letting go of some of the polish and the perfection that we've liked in the past helps make those stories come to life. Hopefully that helps.
I don't know the answer to this question, but I have my suspicion.
But you're going to ask me anyway?
I say I don't know, but I have my suspicion. But I think it will be helpful for folks. Joyfully Hectic is so elegant and so on target. How many versions did you go through to get to that?
You know, we spent a good amount of time thinking about it. But I think the spirit of it, we recognized pretty immediately. You know, we did those psychographic sessions with families, and it was so clear. I mean, these are families that they have real pride in what they've built, in the lives that they're living, in how they've created a system that works, however imperfectly for them financially. There's joy and there's chaos. And again, I think it just felt, you know, when you see something true, you just know it. And again, it resonated with me, it resonated with my team, with others. And I think we all just recognized that there was an important kind of kernel there. And then the words, we have some great copywriters, and they helped us iterate until we landed on one that felt really good.
Very good. Huge round of applause for Eve Callahan.
Thank you so much. Great.
Fantastic.
Thank you.